Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 204 of CJ Evolution, made possible by you, the listener and supporter. Patrick here, whatever you are doing, wherever you are at, thank you for tuning in. I am super excited for our next guest. You're going to love him. But first, I'm very excited to be partnered with Forest Sigmatic, a coffee and product company that produce some very amazing products. I love their mushroom coffee. Yeah, you heard me, mushroom coffee. It is amazing, and it's great for you. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you'll see that Forest Sigmatic link. Now, if you head over to their site, you will get 15% off of their products using the CJEVO product code. Have you been toying with the idea of starting your own podcast? Trust me, I've been there, obviously, and I did it. And I did that with the aid and help of Podbeam. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you will see a link for Podbeam. They're going to show you how to start your own podcast. They're going to push it out for you. They're going to help you market it, and they have an affiliate program. So head over to cjevolution.com, start your own podcast, and let Podbeam help you. You know, I love having guests on that talk about going after their dreams and passion. I'm not saying that you out there working in the criminal justice field aren't doing what you love and are not passionate about what you're doing. I'm just saying that if some of you are thinking about venturing off doing other things, my next guest, is the guy you need to listen to. He used to be an attorney, a prosecutor, then went over to the defense side, and then said, you know what, I'm just going to give up this whole attorney thing and follow my dreams. You're going to love this next guest. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Jonathan Green on the show. He is a well-known speaker, writer, and entrepreneur. Welcome, Jonathan. You there?
I'm here, Patrick. Thanks so much for having me. Well, I really appreciate it.
Of course. Of course. I know you're very busy, and I'm glad you decided to come on the show. I gave a little bit of an intro of who Jonathan Green is. Can you fill in some gaps, sir?
Yeah, sure. I was my first job out of law school was as a prosecutor. I worked as a state prosecutor in the state of Florida for about 7 years in two different counties. Then I opened my own criminal defense firm, did that for almost 3 years. And then at that time, which was about 12 years ago, I gave up on law, not because I didn't love it, because my kids were little and I needed to do something different. Went through different careers, 5 years in the art world. I was a adjunct professor for 3 years and ran a master's program. I got into real estate, did really well in real estate. And just in October of 2017, I decided to finally pursue my creative pursuits and kind of gave into a life of creativity, which right now is taking writing all the time and, you know, about to start a book soon.
That is awesome. And I want to talk about how you kind of left what you were doing and followed your dream and passion. But really, out of curiosity, I'm sure you've gotten this before, Jonathan. I know prosecutors who go over to the defense side. What was the reason? And I don't care either way. I'm always curious.
No, I really wanted to see what it was like on both sides. Mm-hmm. I loved being a prosecutor. I did, you know, high level crimes. I was in a specialized sex crimes unit for over a year when I was in Fort Lauderdale. You know, and then after that, it was primarily high-end first-degree felonies. But I really wanted to see what it was like and if I would have the empathy for the other side. Because when you're a prosecutor, you know, I think that I was very, very reasonable. But if you asked all the defense attorneys that I started with and kind of learned with, they would say that I was not. But I was just really, really tough. But yeah. I think that I was reasonable. If the case was bad, I got rid of it. But, you know, as you know, being a police officer, like you're dealing with a lot of things on that side. And I wanted to see what they felt like from the other side. And I liked both sides, but I got to the point where I couldn't do it with two little kids anymore. Mm-hmm. And because of I was a prosecutor for so long, I would be, you know, I'd be taking my kids somewhere and I'd see somebody I put on probation or, you know, it's just,
that's tough.
It was just getting to a point where I didn't want that life anymore. But I was really glad that I got to see what it was like on both sides and do defense. And I think, you know, a lot of my friends did it. I have probably, I mean, I don't know, 200 at least, you know, attorney friends who have been through on both sides of the system. So I think I learned a lot about life on both sides.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that helped you out. Your being an attorney, it helped you out in your real estate ventures too.
It helped me out in everything. Mm-hmm. I think for me, just public speaking was, I was a trial animal. I did maybe between 200 and 250 trials in 10 years, which is abnormally, a lot. I've done 5 trials in a week. I just loved it. And I always wanted to be in trial instead of sitting in my office. And just that kind of day-to-day work where you have to be up and you have to think on your feet, it helped me in every single thing that I've ever done, any business. It helped me relate to people because generally I'm pretty introverted and people always said, oh, how can you be an introvert if you're so good in court? But it's two different things.
Yeah,
that's more of an informational performance where I can research and I can know every fact of the case. And then it's not really thinking on my feet. It's just reacting. If I know the facts, I was always going to be ahead of everybody. And I was an obsessive worker, an efficiency person. So I was always way ahead of the game. I knew everything. I knew what was going to come. But one thing that I never did is I never diagrammed my questions ever. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just had bullet points because I always, you know, when you're an attorney and you're in trial, you've seen or people have seen on TV, like somebody who's going down the script of their questions, but they're not listening to the answers of the witness. And I knew if I was too tied to my questions, I would make mistakes and I wouldn't be listening. I'd be expecting an answer, but we all learn really quickly that in trial, it's not always the answer that you think.
Now, do you miss it? I mean, you...
Yeah, I miss trials. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't miss the kind of... I miss the camaraderie of attorneys and working with police and, you know, working with judges. I really like that part. But I don't miss the bad part of that, which is like the kind of excessive arguing when you just don't get along and the kind of the day to day was just too much for me. I was good for 80 hours a week. Easy.
Oh,
I'd get in at 5. I'd leave at 8. Because we just had such a high caseload when I started in Fort Lauderdale. I don't know, I have 400, 450 cases to start when I was just, you know, fresh out of law school. Mm-hmm. So you had no choice but to go in, do trials and learn a lot.
Now, what was because a lot of people, there's a catalyst, you know, I mean, I get that you had 2 small kids and you're raising them, but a lot of people are stuck in that cycle, right? I mean, they can't afford to leave. You know, they have a good job. You know, they want to spend more time at home. So how did you just pull the trigger and say, look, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it is my dad taught me from the time I was about 4 years old, my dad started teaching me about investing and real estate. So I knew that I was doing real estate investments from the time I was 18 on my own. So I had other sources of income and I had other interests and I finally just got to a point where I said, okay, I really can't do this because I wasn't fully present with my kids. And that was really the driving force, because I would come home and I'd still be in my suit, and I'd have a trial the next day, but I didn't want to do it. I just wanted to play with my kids.
Yeah.
So because I had a little extra runway, I was able to really say it. I mean, it's tough leaving. I mean, government jobs don't pay that well, but the benefits are fantastic. So, you know, you kind of weigh what you can do. And I was fortunate enough to be able to you know, try something else out which I did. And that's where the 5 years in the art world started. But it was more, it actually plays into what I'm doing now because my dad was an attorney. Mm-hmm. Did wills and probate, wasn't a court guy. But I grew up knowing he was an attorney, but he did most of his real business in real estate. But I never really remembered until after he died that he was also a sculptor and a painter. And so he had these creative pursuits that because you asked, you know, some people get stuck. He never let himself do that, you know, enough. He did it a lot when he was younger, and I just said when he died, like, I'm not going to do this. And I stayed doing law because he was so proud of me. He loved watching me in trial. He was just like, because he could never do that part of it. So I really was kind of mentally out of it. And then when he died, I was like, there's no reason for me to stay in this at all right now.
And he was a very smart man, because he taught you at a very young age to have multiple streams of income, which is what it's about if you want to free yourself from the rat race.
Right. And I had done that. I mean, obviously, and he grew up with nothing. My dad grew up with his dad was a gambler, you know, so he would get like a new car and then it would get repossessed. So he knew right away to teach me and my sister, like, you need to learn these things. And I couldn't have learned any more from him as business and a person, only if I had more years, which I didn't. He died when I was 33, so that was 14 years ago.
But the one thing, I mean, I love all what you're doing, but you strive to live an authentic life without regret. And that really is profound. I mean, it really is, because a lot of us, like, it goes back to, so many people are stuck, but the reality is, Jonathan, and you know, I don't care what you're doing out there, life is short, man. We're only here, relatively speaking, for a very short period of time. So why not go after your dreams? Why not take that step forward, writing a book, starting a business? I know it would be hard, but you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, I think like you said, people get stuck, but they're not as stuck as they think they are. I mean, everybody says, oh, well, I can't leave the job. Well, you can leave the job. Sure. You just have to figure out other ways to make the income go, get yourself some runway before you do it, or figure out a stopgap measure, or spend less. You know, if sometimes people just don't want to leave the kind of life they're living, but they could.
Yeah.
You know, they could just cut the stuff in half.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it took me a long time to get to a point where I think now I really understand myself and what I want. And it also helped me that my kids are getting older. They're going to college soon. And I know that I'm kind of going to be able to move around a little bit and do the things that I want. So I did get to a point where it's exactly how I feel. I mean, I don't have any regrets at all. Yeah. And that doesn't mean my life's been perfect.
Oh, of course.
It's not. I've done stupid things. I've wasted money in businesses. You know, it's just that, like you said, I don't want to be looking back when I'm on my deathbed thinking I should have. And for me, that doesn't mean I need to go hang gliding or skydiving. I'm not into that stuff. I just want to make sure I'm bringing more to the world, you know, and not being selfish. And you know, part of that is being a little bit selfish and doing what's creative for me. But I think if I do that, I'm putting more good stuff out there.
I remember reading an article a while back. The number one thing that people do on their deathbed is regret. You know, that they bring up, I didn't regret
That's
taking
exactly
this chance.
What I was talking about.
I didn't. Nobody ever says, Jonathan, I wish I would have spent more time at work. Right.
Exactly.
I would have spent more time in relationships and taking more risk and, you know, just going for it.
Yeah. And I think that it's a defeatist attitude, and I can't, instead of figuring out, well, it's not going to be easy, but let me figure out how I can. And I've had conversations with people say, look, I can't leave my job. And I say, great, then you figure out how much runway you need and get there.
Yeah.
Because you can do that.
It's a mindset,
it's possible.
Too.
Yeah. It very much mindset. I mean, I think, you know, I didn't get into paying attention to my mindset until I got much older. And the more I paid attention to what I was actually doing every day, you know, and how I could spend my time, what I was putting into my body, it changed the way that my mind worked. And I think that's how I kind of got here, was eliminating a lot of things from my life that weren't good for me mentally, physically, and just starting to kind of create a bubble where I can work well and my mind will work at peak, you know, performance all the time.
Now, you talk a little bit about, I mean, there's a bunch of topics that you're an expert at. I mean, one of them is work-life balance. And we've talked about that on this show before. What are some of the systems and tools that you can use, or the listener out there, to balance, you know, their work life? Because we're all busy. You know, we're trying to juggle everything. Family, especially people in law enforcement, and obviously, you know, people, you know, attorneys, busy.
Yeah. Absolutely. So for me, I think the number one thing, I mean, I use technology for a lot, but I've really scaled it back because I think that is a huge thing that can assist the work-life balance. Like, I don't want to always be looking at social media. I'd rather be looking at my kids. But for me, time blocking was a huge thing. I've taught plenty of classes on time blocking. And for me, people think that time blocking is kind of a waste and it's dumb. You put a bunch of stuff in Google Calendar and then you never look at it. But for me, I've always been really list driven. I make a lot of to-do lists, but my calendar is full. And as part of the classes that I've done, it really starts with blocking off easy things that are recurring and for your family. Like the first thing I do when the school year starts is I block off everything in my kids' school schedules. So mm-hmm. I know I won't miss it.
Sure.
Because the thing that happens is you don't write down the Friday off in the middle of, you know, March, and then both parents go to work and you're like, oh, then your kid says, no, I have a half day and you didn't put it in your schedule.
Yeah.
So anything that I get a schedule for, I put everything in right away. My daughter's dance competitions. And then I start to go backwards and I try to schedule out time where I know I need to spend, you know, X amount of time. Like for people in a relationship, scheduling out just date night, whether people think that sounds like, you know, mechanical, if you don't do it, everybody knows you won't have it. It'll be three months later. And the more that I keep stuff on the calendar, the easier it is for me to know that it's there. And I never delete it. If I can't do it, I take it and move it to another time and I'll move it again, but I'm not going to give up on doing the stuff that's on my calendar.
And that is so important. And that's so true, because the busier I get in my life, I can't survive, Jonathan, without a calendar, without some sort of notification coming up.
Yeah, and the truth is, if you're not keeping track of everything you have to do and what you're doing, you're not being efficient. And mm-hmm. I, especially starting as a prosecutor, everybody knew me as an efficiency freak. I changed systems in the offices just because I wanted to do things.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I was already working so much. And but so efficiency is how I play into what I want to do. And it's just making sure I can see everything and I want to look at the day. And I like always, like I have a journal. The one I'm using now is right in front of me. It's an Ink and Volt journal. Mm-hmm. I think it's the productivity planner. And so that gives me like goals for the week and I just put the stuff down and then it has a stuff to do. So like for to-dos, I have those in a book because I actually get more out of physically checking them off or crossing them out with a pen than keeping those online. Mm-hmm. I keep my general schedule on Google Calendar. And then I use Trello for a lot. Especially in my creative practice, you know, Trello is like a, you know, team management type of thing, mm-hmm. but I've created a bunch of systems in there. I had an entire onboarding program, when I was in real estate for the team where they could go in and all the onboarding was in there and I could see what they were doing. And mm-hmm. that again is just another way to be efficient. So I keep a lot of things, like I keep goals for the year, things I want to do with my kids all on a board. And when I do them, I can move them to completed, and the, you know, those three things together, to-do list on paper, Trello for managing things that are longer term, and then Google Calendar for time blocking have all been huge for me.
And I use AnyDo. I don't know if you've heard of that before. Yeah, I love that app, and I use you know, Google Calendars and other things. But it is so important. There's psychology behind this too. You know that, Jonathan. If you write things down, if you write goals down, and if you write things down, you're more apt to complete them rather than, first of all, you can't remember everything.
Right. And the more you forget, then it's like, oh, no, I forgot. The one thing I like so much about to-do lists first is that eventually there's things that you know you're not going to do. So you just get rid of them. Like you keep writing them for the next week five times. And then it's just like, listen, you just need to admit it. That's one's not happening. You don't need to do it. You know, and with Google Calendar, I think that the thing that people forget that is so good for families is you can all share a calendar.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have a family calendar and your kids want to know, you know, your kids don't need to call you at work to say, hey, can you take me somewhere on Wednesday night? You just say, no, look at the computer. You can see if I'm home. If I'm home, I'll take you, you know, and then you can put it on the calendar, send me an invite and I'll say, yes, I can take you. And then we don't have to spend the time, you know, texting and all the other things.
Now, I want to kind of go back a little bit with what you talked about when you left your job. You know, for people out there listening, and I know some people out there listening in criminal, whatever you're doing in criminal justice, want to leave your job. you know, whether you don't like it or whatever, you're not passionate sure. about it. How do you know, Jonathan, when you are ready to leave your job and start a creative pursuit or endeavor?
I mean, it's hard to say because so many people are unhappy mm-hmm. at work, mm-hmm. but I truly believe if you're unhappy at work, you need to seek out some type of other work because mm-hmm. there's no reason that work has to be a burden. It doesn't have to be fun every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it has to be something that you're passionate about or you're basically wasting half your life. Mm-hmm. You know, so even for people who are like, well, this is the job, this is where my skill set is, and this is how I can make the most money, then I still say focus on that and focus how you can make the money to hold to the side so you can get to the next thing that you want to do. Mm-hmm. So for me, I kept going back to kind of standardized employment. And then I realized after reading tons of books, one, obviously, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek.
Love that book.
It's an eye opener. And it didn't mean to me, like it took me a few years to really kind of do it. But it's just something that tells you really anybody can do it. And I think it's an important point to know that if you're spending half of your time at work and you hate it, there's something that can be done about it. I can't say it's easy for everyone. Can't just sure. drop it and go find another job. I mean, jobs don't grow on trees, but it just seems that there's a better way to do it if you sit down, plan it out, and take some thought about where you want your life to go instead of just accepting like, this is it, this is what I'm going to do, because those are the people who are going to be on the deathbed later saying I should have done something else.
Well, and I think a lot of people out there who want to try something, whatever it is, are so worried about their critics. A lot of their biggest critics are family. I know that.
Absolutely.
So I think some people are worried, you know, when you stray away from the herd, Jonathan, people are like, what are you doing, man? You can't do that. You can't. I'm sure you had people in your career and law in, you know, being an attorney saying, what are you, Jonathan, you crazy? Why don't you start your own private practice? You make a boatload of money. And you were like, no, I'm going to stray away from the herd. And they tried to get you back. And you're like, you know what? Screw that. I'm going to go after my pursuits.
Yeah, I mean, they still do. And I did it to myself. But I do understand that people really, you know, parents, family members, friends in the profession are like, how could you do that? But everybody is on a different journey. And I think mm-hmm. if you're the answer to it is I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And nobody who cares about you is going to say, oh, you should keep doing that if you're not happy. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just throw it all to the wind and go into bankruptcy. But there's certainly ways to figure out over time how to save more money, how to plan for the future. And I think that I didn't learn it quickly. I'm 47 and I only just last year really stopped the standardized employment route, because the thing for me is I was fine going to a 9-to-5 type of job, which for me was always, you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But I just got to a point where I needed more freedom for myself. And I had done it once before. I took a kind of sabbatical to write, and I wasn't as motivated. And now, after all of the kind of work that I did, reading, studying, and speaking, and figuring things out while I was in real estate, I just figured that I can take that and move it to my own life and not put myself in the shackles that mm-hmm. I was in.
Well, and I imagine, I don't know, but I'm willing to bet that you're probably healthier. You have less stress in your life.
100%.
You know, I mean, you're happier, which means you're going to be happier towards your kids, and not that you Absolutely. Weren't before, but everything, you know, kind of, I remember I had a good friend of mine that, you know, got out of law enforcement a couple of years ago, and he was like, God, I just don't know what to do with my life now. And he was bored, you know, and he was upset. He naysayed, you know, back and forth, whether or not.
Yeah.
Now he's one of the happiest guys I know. You know,
once you find it, you can figure out a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And I am, I'm mentally in the best place in my life. But I mean, the one thing you said before is, you know, how going against the grain. And I've always been like that. So I've always been an anti-personality. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's almost a challenge. Like, I like moving mm-hmm. where other people don't like moving. I like starting new endeavors because I just want to do something different. And I always want to do something against the grain, because I think that there's always something to be found. The only way for me to find the most efficient options are to find the ways that it's not being done yet. And that's what makes it tick for me, mm-hmm. you know. And so for me, kind of having naysayers makes me even more motivated.
Stronger, yeah. And people ask me sometimes, well, you know, how do you do that? You know, how did you start a podcast? And I've learned a long time ago, when you figure out the why, the how will come.
Yeah.
Once you figure out the why, okay, why am I doing this? Jonathan, why did you leave this? Because I wanted to do this. The how, the pathway is going to reveal itself.
Right. And honestly, once you know your why and you have an internet connection, you can learn how to do anything.
Oh,
it's
exactly.
Really like if you want to do work on your house, you can just watch, you can find anything on YouTube. Anytime I need to know how to do something, I just go into Google, type exactly what I'm looking for, and there's somebody on YouTube, and I'll watch a couple just to make sure, you know, I'm not doing it wrong. But like, really, like you said, with podcasting, like that's how we learn how to do things. Like if I want to learn how to start a business, I'll just type in how to start a small business, you know, I'll read books. I read a ton. I read 75 books last year.
Wow.
And that is another thing that really changed my outlook. I'm starting to put so much information into my head. And a lot of that is through podcasts too, because it's to listen to podcasts where you're exercising in the car. All I do is listen to podcasts or Audible books.
Yeah.
It's such a great way to spend the time. And you can really get things that are a huge, huge value other than listening to the radio.
Yeah, exactly. And my wife and I don't know if you've ever seen Tony Robbins. We saw him last week.
Yeah.
Well, you know how. I mean, just amazing. And he said this probably before, and I've listened to his podcast, but we really, truly live in one of the most amazing times in history where we have this ability, you know, I mean, just we're becoming more educated. We have this technology that we never had before. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. You know, could we do this 20 years ago?
Right,
no.
Right. No, I always talk about that, you know, a lot with my kids. Like, you don't know, I had a computer, but it didn't have any internet access. And, you know, my dad didn't have a computer.
Well, you and I had phones on the walls. Remember those with the big, huge,
absolutely,
you know, telephone cord?
That the dialers,
50 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I did. I would drag it from my living room into my room and hide in there with a 50-foot cable.
Now, we talk about technology, Jonathan. How can you use social media to prepare for conversations with people?
Yeah,
you're a social media guy.
Yeah, and I mean, the funniest thing is now I'm in a social media backlash. I deleted Facebook, but there's so much value in it. I just think it has to be done right. So if you're preparing for a meeting, the thing that I always use is LinkedIn. Mm. LinkedIn is the greatest source that nobody uses enough because everybody's virtual resume is on there. So for me, when I was in a sales business, I would always look at LinkedIn because I could confirm kind of a percentage possibility of these people being a real prospect by seeing if their jobs lined up with what I was saying or what they were trying to buy. So before an interview, I always go on to LinkedIn because I can look the sneaky parts of LinkedIn that people pass up on, or you can find where they went to college.
Mm-hmm.
You can look and see what their philanthropic interests are, other jobs that they've had, because the thing that I'm always looking for is I'm looking for points of connection,
mm-hmm,
because that will get you three steps forward quicker if you know a little without being like, you know, online stalky and saying, oh, I saw what you posted on Facebook. Like, that's weird. But if you say, hey, I saw that you went to, you know, Babson College, I know somebody who went there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you say, I saw that you were interested, you know, you work for Humane Society, I also have, you know, done that.
Yeah.
Those are ways where you can connect with people a lot quicker in a very real way. And it's not creepy because LinkedIn is a business portal. And that's where you're supposed to get the information. So that's a huge underutilized for so many people, because if you can get those points of contact, you'll just move so much farther into an actual connection, which is the only way you're getting anywhere, you know, in business, sales, anything. The only way you're going to get to the next level is by having honest connections. And that's a great way to get started.
And I love LinkedIn. I mean, I've been on LinkedIn for a while now, and you're exactly right.
I'm over 10 years now.
What's that?
I think I've had it for like 10, 12 years.
It's amazing. But the one thing I've noticed about LinkedIn, and I don't know if you've noticed recently, Jonathan, and they do a pretty good job with it. It's not obviously Facebook. It's all business. But I have noticed a couple of things, you know, in the last month or two. It's kind of like almost like some of the feeds I've come across that I've looked at are almost like Facebook-ish.
Yeah, I just wrote an article about that on Medium that says it's not called something like I don't want to connect with you on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Because what they did is in the beginning, it was very, very strict. Like, remember, if you remember, you couldn't send a message to anyone. You need to have in mail,
or
you had to be connected to them. Now it's like I get, you know, 20, 25 connections a week, and I'll look and I just decline them because they'll be asking, they'll be, you know, it'll be like LexisNexis trying to sell me. I haven't been an attorney in 12 years, you know, where they're trying to send me something for real estate. I'm not in real estate anymore. Like, they're not even looking at it. So they opened up the platform to make it more social, but to me, it kind of ruined it.
Yeah.
For my purposes, the information is still there, but I don't spend any time kind of like I used to looking through it, because it's all my messages that I get are spam. The feed is all, you know, garbage. It's not business related. You have to shut everything off. And that's, I've gotten to that point with social media where, you know, I deleted Facebook. I still have Instagram just because I like seeing stuff. I like the visual aspect and I don't have to read a lot, but, you know, I deleted Pinterest and LinkedIn. I keep right now because of the virtual resume is, I think, so important. If somebody like, you know, when we connect on LinkedIn, because then you can look at the background and we don't have to spend that extra time, you know, because everybody runs a different life. So I like to be able to connect and look at things on my time frame. And LinkedIn definitely still serves that purpose, but I'm 100% with you.
Now, we talked a little about, I know you got a podcast out there, and we talked about, I know it's kind of on hiatus right now, but you're working on writing. Can you tell us a little bit about what your writing is?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that. When I gave up standardized employment, I did it so I could start writing again and create my podcast. So my podcast has 7 episodes. It's called Dad, the Podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you know, it's on all of the things on Apple Podcasts. If you type in Dad and Jonathan Green, it will come up. It's an orange picture of me sitting on my dad's shoulders. It's kind of, that was really important to me. It's really a parenting podcast, and I had a lot of people who lost parents, and we have a few more set up. But with the writing, it's been great. I spend most of my time right now writing on medium.com. So on there, I'm at medium.com/@, and then Jonathan Green, and Green has an E at the end. And so I have been really prolific on there. In the last 2 months, I wrote over 100,000 words, published 100 stories, because I really am into it. And I write on, I think right now on Medium, I'm a top writer in 15 different categories. Everything, business, life lessons, love, productivity, relationships. I just write everything that's inside of me. And that's gone really well. And that's kind of set the table. I wanted to learn. I wanted to see what my volume could be. And if I, now that I know I can write 100,000 words in 2 months, now I can start to write one of my first novel. I've written 2 screenplays that I did not sell, that are kind of still in process, but they're both complete. But now I'm moving into a novel. There's 2 ideas that I am toying with. And once I decide, I think this summer is going to be the time where I embark on the first novel.
Well, I was going to say, you have a book in you.
I think I have several. I'm just trying to get them out in parts right now and then see how they work. But I think I've lived an interesting life. I've done a lot of things, and I've let myself have the leeway to do those things. And I also learned a lot from my parents. You know, both my mom died when I was 20. My dad dies when I was 33. Mm-hmm. And those things play a role in what I talk about, and how I act, and what I want for the rest of my life, because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I better make sure that I'm living my life well.
Well, Jonathan Green, I appreciate you coming on, sir. Once again, if people can find you, what's the easiest way to hook up with you?
Yeah, so I'm out of Facebook for good, but I am on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm at Trust, T-R-U-S-T, Green, G-R-E-E-N-E. On Medium, you can find me at Jonathan Green is the part of Medium. I am on Instagram as Green with an E at the end, Green Living. But I generally, the one thing I'll say is, I'm reversed my following cycle. I found that I was always just kind of following people to think they'd follow me, and I don't do any of that. Like, I'm moving, trying to have only 100 followers. I'm only going to follow 100 things on every network. Yeah. I'm still working on that. And you know, content wise, I put more out on Medium than anything, and I'm active on Twitter.
Yeah. And it's not about the, you know, it's not about the thousands of followers. It's about the depth. You know, it's about, are you connecting with those followers?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right. And raving fans is what everybody wants. And for me, I choose to follow who I really want to see what, you know, what they're saying, what they're doing. And if they don't want to follow me because I don't follow them, that's okay, because mm-hmm. I only want people who are interested in what I'm really saying. And that's why I like Medium. It's a platform mm-hmm. for writers. It's writers writing to writers and readers who want to read. And that's gone really well so far. So I get a lot of motivation from the friends that I've met on there, because there's just so much to read on there. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Well, Jonathan Green, thank you, sir, for taking the time to come on the show and talk some very valuable advice and tips on how to be successful and, you know, going for your dreams, because that's important. I mean, everybody out there in law enforcement listening or in criminal justice, we're living longer. We all know that. And there, you know, if you want to take that leap, maybe you're ready to retire or pursue other endeavors. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
So you got to do it. And you're welcome back, Jonathan. Anytime you want to come back, I hope you write your book and we'll come on and we'll promote it.
Yeah, Patrick, I really appreciate you having me on. I love the show, and I just appreciate being a guest and look forward to listening to it when it comes out.
All right. Much success to you, sir, and we'll talk with you.
All right. Thanks so much, Patrick.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.